Welcome to the Roughish Registry. We're here, episode number 3.
Yeah, we got 2 out, and I guess we'll try to do 2 more, see what people think.
Yeah, yeah. So we had, I got the number last night. It was over 400 listens on episode 1, so that was pretty cool. Nice little splash into the podcast world. And episode 2, we got like 150, so we're giving it time.
Yeah, it's soaking.
Yeah.
You know, with this episode, we've got the man, the myth, the legend.
The social media mastermind.
Yeah, Jeff Niebuhl. How you doing?
Hey, guys. How you doing? I doubt that's the mastermind, but I'll enjoy that for about 5 minutes.
That's right.
I have watched your posts for about a year and a half now, and
yep.
I get anxiety looking at how many likes and notifications you get, because I have to like think every 5 minutes you're like, oh great, another 49 likes on this picture.
you know sometimes it's crazy when I post that and I'll get those interactions, and it's great, don't get me wrong. The sad thing is sometimes you get your buddies, they start arguing, and you know, it always ends up being a post that I end up having to delete sometimes, because you know, I've got my Aunt Beth in East Texas that watches and reads that, so I'm like, oh no, you know. But yeah, it's good. Social media has changed, obviously, bow fishing, you know, and it's a great platform if used in the right way.
Oh yeah, so you do the record keeping for the BAA, so you're the one that's behind posting all the new state, or I guess the state or world record fish that come out on social media.
Yeah, you know what is. We had another guy that was helping us the year before last, and they were taking a long time to get up there. And what happened is I actually shot a record, not like 3 weeks. That's just way too long for a record to get added, because you know how it is when you shoot a record fish, I don't care who you are, it feels great. Well, it feels really good if you can get that certified and up within the next 5 to 7 days once you shot that fish. And so that was a goal of mine, is to be able to help better that. And I think we've done that. Like I said, you know, we, for last year alone, we increased it from the year before about 55%. So, the main thing is we've made a few changes. If you go to the BAA and you click on records, you can see now we've allowed a new scale that anybody can take on their boat. This is a scale that we took about a year to test. And I wanted a scale that was pretty reliable. And the story of that's pretty interesting. We had a 15-year-old kid that shot a record big mouth buck in Texas.
Wow.
And the problem was his father, you know, they didn't have much money, and you could just tell, man, they were in a remote part of East Texas, and they didn't have a way to weigh it. The co-op was too far away. And
That seems to be everybody's problem. I mean, when it comes down to it.
So they actually ended up throwing the fish away, and I was like, oh, and this kid really had the pictures, but didn't have a scale that was obviously over 50 pounds. And so that was and I felt bad for the kid, because I've been that kid before that didn't have the money or didn't have the resources. And so we took some time, about a year, to test out a scale. And so far, we were happy with the results, and still today we are. And so $55, $40, $49 scale off of Amazon, and now when they do take that, they've got to videotape that and send it to us, and that helps at least certify on our what we demand.
So if somebody shoots a record fish, they need to have this scale. Which, do you remember it off the top of your head? I looked it up the other day, and I don't.
It's funny. Somebody asked me the other day, I was like, look, it's on Amazon, or go there, because it's a long part number. But you know, really, we want them all to take it to a co-op or to a certified scale. I mean, that's the number one go-to plan. And that's what we prefer. And when you do take it, you still have to document. But this is another way that helps you make sure you've got a record fish. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think because of that last year, I will guarantee you probably 75% of the records that we took, people had that scale on their boat or had access to one. And and it helped determine the record fish. So
yeah, I think Pate looked the name of that scale up. It is
it a Clow industrial, yep, digital hanging scale?
Yeah, Yeah, that's the scale. And like I said, the only thing I suggest people to do is make sure you keep it in a dry box. And if you don't, those batteries inside with water and moisture over time will corrode, and you'll end up having a scale that doesn't work. But if you keep it in a dry box, you'll be fine, good to go. So back in the BAA, I took the role of doing the records and maintaining that. And like I said, we're going to bring Cole, a friend of ours, this year later on to help certify those with us online, because we do get a lot of submissions, and that's another thing, is taking the due diligence to really ask the questions and make sure those fish are record fish. But like I said, I think it's a good thing for the BAA, and it makes me feel good to see these guys that have taken the time to shoot a record fish. And there's a lot of states, I'll tell you, for example, Virginia. I mean, you get people in North Carolina especially that are out to break those records, are out to do it, and they're having a fun time doing it. So it's really good. So
you shot the record grass carp. Was it last year, right?
Yeah. You know, that was 2 years ago.
Two years ago.
And what's crazy, there's a great story behind that. And I'm humble about that. When I shot it, I made one post about it and didn't call the news stations. I didn't call all the newspapers, but you know, I had taken two people out that had never bow fished that night before. There's a girl and a guy. Mm-hmm. And we are just getting off plane. It's 12 o'clock at night. Both of them are hitting fish, so we're having a great time. And in an airboat, you're getting off plane, and I'm looking up ahead, probably 70 yards, 60 yards, and I see something in this creek channel. Well, the girl and guy are just sitting there talking, and I'm coming off plane, slowing it down and going idle speed. And we're about 50 yards from this object, and I keep looking. Now we're about 30 yards from it, and I'm going, oh, my goodness.
Sasquatch.
And I'm saying it to myself. I'm not telling them, because I'm like,
you don't want to get them all jacked up, yeah.
Right. So I swear to God, I'm telling you, it reminds me of the big gator guard that we see down in South Texas. And I'm going, oh, my goodness. And I'm looking at this grass carp. Now she is about 20 yards in front of me. And I'm looking, and out of the corner of my eye, the girl pulls back and takes a shot at this huge grass carp.
No.
I'm like going, no! And then she misses, and the grass carp just blows out, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I have just seen the biggest grass carp of my life. Now, let me tell you something. That grass carp had taking my time on this, it had a hole on the side of its body where it's been shot before.
Ooh.
And yeah, so that was interesting. Well, anyway, so this thing blows out, and I'm just mad, but I haven't said anything. And people that fish with me know me, and I'm just biting my lip, man. And I'm like, oh my God, that was the biggest grass carp. Well, 10 minutes later, idle speed, and you know, we're way far away from where that grass carp had blown out. And I look down to my left, and here comes this giant grass carp to my left, guys, right? And I see it coming right at the boat. Well, for me, I can do long shots. I can do shots 5 feet out, great. But the hardest shot for me is a shot straight down. And she came right to my boat, and I shot her in the back top of the head. And she was going to get a free boat ride. She wasn't going anywhere. But when I got her in the boat, I said, oh, my goodness, we got something here. And it wasn't the same fish, because it didn't have the hole shot on the side.
Yeah.
But I get that fish in, and by the way, I've got the girl and guy there. They don't know what to think. They see the biggest fish they've ever seen before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, folks, I said, we need to go. And they didn't know what was wrong. I said, guys, this is the big grass carp. It's bigger than the 65-pounder that I shot out here. And we get to the boat ramp. But here's the thing. As I come out of the place that shot it, there's one guy, and he knows who he is. He'll be listening to this conversation, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He saw my boat, and he knew exactly where we were coming out of. Because the two people I had would never tell anybody we were at. They had no clue. So this guy, I guess him and Brian Hughes for the next month, went out there a few times, and sure enough, they shot one that beat it by about a pound and a half, I think. which is amazing fish, man. But
they were both high 90s, weren't they? Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, 91 okay, so and 93.
Okay.
Was the one that broke yours, did you ever find out if it had the hole in the side of it?
Yeah, so get this. This is the end of the story. So I remember Jeff White, who does the guide service down in Panama City, when they shot the Muzzy, I remember Jeff telling the story how he shot, he still to this day will tell you it's a 100-pound big grassy. And let me tell you, Jeff White does not lie. He ain't one of those guys that's going to make up stories. And, I mean, he is genuinely such a good guy in bow fishing. And so I heard that story a long time ago. I called Jeff that next morning. When I remember that fish that you shot at the Muzzy? Oh, that big grass carp. Yeah. Which side of it, of the fish? If the fish is facing, the tail's on the left, the face is to your right. He goes, that side. I said, where'd you shoot it at? He says, right behind the gill plate. And I said, Jeff, what are the odds of me finding the fish that you shot? You know, so we think. Yeah, and the guys that shot that witch and that tournament, they saw how big that grass carp was. So it's still alive. I mean, it's still probably out there kicking and going, and somebody one day may shoot it. So,
yeah, that you know, that lake is a phenomenal lake. I mean, we've made the trip down from Missouri for the previous two carp outs, and I just love it. I love getting down there on Gunnersville.
Yeah, you know, Gunnersville's a great lake. This year was a tough year. I mean, I think Belmore and I went out there two times, and I'm not kidding you, we didn't see squat. And then we go out another time, and you know, we're on the fish, and then on the 24th, I think the Christmas Eve, we went out there and probably shot 700 pounds plus, big buffs, big commons. So it's just it's a lake that you love hate, but there's so much history on that lake that's. That one day someone could write a book about it.
I mean, that's probably one of the lakes that is the hardest bowfish lakes in the country. Would you not agree?
Yeah, it definitely gets a lot of traffic. That's why me personally, I mean, there's part of me inside of me that's glad the carp out isn't going to go and the Muzzy's not there. I mean, just to relieve the pressure. I mean, last year we fought a big battle with the bass fishing guys not wanting us on the lake, and they were misinformed. But, you know, it seems like less traffic would please anybody, but it definitely gets a lot of traffic. I mean, if you had to put your top five lakes in the United States, it's definitely in the top five.
Oh, 100%. I mean, and it still kicks out record fish about every year too, which
yeah,
is what's
you know,
crazy.
What's and here's what's funny. I try to tell people this is we don't if it wasn't for the carp out, we really don't go out and shoot common carp there. It's we're trying to chase down buffs, man. I mean, that's what I love to do. I mean, and that's why a lot of these bass guys, we had explained to them, look, these airboats, they were always worried about the airboats, you know, being in 6 inches of water where the bass were on beds. And we had explained to them, look, you know, the majority of the time we're trying to push buffs out of 4 foot to 15 foot of water. And, without saying too much about that, I mean, it just, you know, we took some people out recently, and the water was probably 17 feet to 12 feet, and we were pushing buffs up left and right and chasing them down, you know. But and that was the good thing about the carp out, is that to see those numbers, I mean, when the first carp out happened, it actually, and I don't think we ever did any of the BA records, you know, you're so tired after those events. But, mm-hmm. you know, those common carps, every one of them beat the Alabama state record.
Yeah, I think that first year was 35 pounds or something that
yeah,
took first place.
Where the previous, if I'm not mistaken, I think I remember it's 25 pounds for the biggest common, or they definitely beat it though.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Jeff, what is that, the concern? I know you went into it in a little bit of detail, but what is the large concern that the bass community saw on Gunnersville? Was it just running an airboat in shallow water and pushing fish off beds, or was it more than that? Or
Yeah, my personal opinion is the guy that had the motive to put that on was trying to fan the fire, and where he miscalculated was he did a press release on the newspaper, and it became one line on AL.com. He, part of his paragraph is he blamed bow fishermen, and we took offense to that. And real quick story, he had his motive was to get money so they could restock the lake, and My personal opinion is he's really close to the company that's doing the stocking program, which will end up being about $1.2 million. It could be less, but to blame bow fishermen for that, I think what happened was a huge mistake, and I'll tell you why. We showed up in force out there. We had a deal where the state rep was there, the congressman for Alabama, all the head people with the game and fish, they were there. Mm-hmm. And we showed up, and there's about 50 of us. And you could tell we dominated the room. And you could tell the guy that had started all of this, we kept quiet the whole time. And I got to give credit here to Belmore. Chuck Belmore, man, actually stepped up. And I thought, I swear, if you would have put wrestling tights on Belmore, man, he was about to do he was about to be Dusty Rhodes, man. I mean, he was about to. he was, man. So just picture Chuck Belmore with wrestling tights, looking like Dusty Rhodes, and about to. And he laid the smackdown. He had the knowledge that we needed, and you could tell them going. The whole ship changed, and it never since then have they blamed bow fishermen. They stayed away from that.
So was it they're just blaming of habitat degradation or something like that and this losing numbers? Okay, all right. And that guy was hoping to potentially
What happened, that guy actually found a picture of a bass that got stuck. Could have been stuck by an arrow. There's no proof. It could have been stuck by a camera. It could have been stuck by a bird, you know?
Sure.
And
sure.
That was Chuck's principle, but that guy tried to use that against us, and it backfired on him. Here's the deal. You know what? People will tell you, you do not want to be on my boat and shoot a bass. It happens, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm a big bass guy. You know, that's kind of what got me into bow fishing a long time ago. But guys just don't go out targeting bass.
No.
We don't do that, you know?
Well, I know that, it can happen, sure, especially if you got a new person on the boat. But, if you talk about a lake like Gunnersville that has so many, it's just so
huge
massive.
Huge bass.
You'd have to have, three or four carp hats a year where they go out and try to shoot bass before it's ever affected. I mean, a logical person can understand that. And I think, obviously, based on the results from that meeting, that so did the state representatives and the Department of Conservation. So the logical choice was made, and we're all right.
I promise you this. I promise you, there's more bass killed in dry wells
out
of the fish than a bow fishing guy will ever do. I mean, seriously, and that's what backfired them. Also,
Yeah, I worked a summer tournament, a bass fishing tournament this year, and. Oh, we got some feedback somewhere. You still there, Jeff?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. Oh, did you just change inputs or something on your phone?
I can hear you now.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, so I worked a summer bass fishing tournament, and they were coming in at like noon and 1 o'clock when the weigh-in was at 3, and they were just like, the fish are just dying left and right. And I bet there were 100 fish that died that day. I mean, it was a state-sanctioned, tournament.
Yeah, and they just turn a blind eye to the bass fishing.
It's just, it's political.
It's always going to be issues, and I think what's important is as we group together, and let me back up a bit. One thing about bow fishing is we're so intertwined. Like, we have a brotherhood that is pretty tight, regardless of the fact that you may have beef with somebody. And I said this yesterday, is... Let's say that I got an issue with XYZ, right?
Right.
I know for a fact that that guy got stuck or stranded or hurt, I'd be there for the guy. Vice versa, And we have such a strong brotherhood that, when we have events that come up, kind of like the bass fishing issue at Lake Gunnersville, we had all those guys show up, and they band together. And it's good. You don't find that in bass fishing, I promise you. Bass fishing is really a... You stay over there. This is my spot. So that's a good thing about bow fishing. One other thing, like the BAA, about 2014, 2013, do you remember all the fish dumping problems we were having?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Constantly problems. Then we started doing the signs and making people aware and also policing ourselves. That's a huge deal. Think about last year. It didn't happen as often as it has in the past.
No, people are definitely more educated when it comes to that. I mean, someone sees them, there's so many more bow fishermen. If if I see fish dumping, you know, I'll address it with the person. Or if I find fish on the bank when I'm taking my boat out of the water, I just deal with them. You know, I'll throw them in my bucket and just roll on.
Yeah, right. Because collectively, if we don't take a stance on that, that's the fastest way to get to have our sport affected. Not, you know, we know we're not hurting any of the natural animals,
native species
in the water, but our ignorance and you know, that's what's going to hurt us. So, you know, with what you guys champion and push through for the signs and just constant communications on how to properly dispose of fish and not, you know, dumping them in channels or right at the ramp. I mean, that's exactly what that organization is for.
Well, I'll tell you this, at that meeting, again, to bring that meeting up in Gunnersville, I wish we could have taped it, because the head game warden stood up and goes, guys, let me tell you, bow fishermen are the best at policing themselves. I mean, you couldn't have asked for the right quote at the right time, because it's true. We do a good job, I think, of policing ourselves. Like, you know, we had an incident last year where we knew the boat ramp, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I found the dead fish. I didn't make too big of a stink about it, but I started sending the message to these guys that fish this part of the lake in West Tennessee. And you know what? We found the guys. And they told them, said, listen, Kneeball's about to put you on blast, man. Go pick up your fish. Those, and they were about 18, 19-year-old kids. Let me tell you what, they came out and picked up those fish.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And you hope they learn a good lesson, that they're not, you know, they're held accountable, you know?
Sure, definitely. We all need to be.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. I mean, that's just some awesome things that the BAA can do for us. So we definitely need to make sure everybody that listens is a member. And, you know, they're out there fighting for what we do every day.
Yeah, and I think this year you're going to see with the BAA more PSAs, more public service announcements. We got some stuff, literatures that they can download that we're about to upload this week that people can download. If they want to put on events, you know, they need literature to hand out. You know, we need to do a better job of showing how bow fishing works. And, you know, another thing is fish disposal. There's a whole thing we're fixing to start. A lot of guys shoot fish from the bank. And, you know, for example, in Indiana, you cannot leave your fish at the bank. You must carry out. You can't throw them back in the water, you know. So it's a $250 fine, I believe, for Indiana. So those are things that we're going to try to list and promote. So you get somebody that's new into it, they understand the rules.
Yeah, and every state's different. Isn't it Kentucky Dam? You can't take the fish out of the area. Is that right?
Man, I'm not sure about that one.
I thought I'd read that somewhere, and I may be way off. So if I am,
when I've shot fish at the dam, I see a lot of people keeping their fish on the sidewalk, and they take them home, or they're just going elsewhere with them. So I'm not sure the rules on that. And that's what, you know, mainly I'm shooting from a boat. So, but I had somebody actually last week ask me about Indiana, and I had to do the research. And sure enough, the waste not want rule, or whatever it's called, it's very strict there. And there's some states that says that you can cut the air bladder and throw them back in. Some states you got to carry them with you and take them out.
Cool. So let's let's just jump right in to another topic. How did Jeff Kneeball get started bow fishing?
You know, here's the deal. I used to bass fish and fly fish like I do for bow fishing. I was big into that. And I remember we were getting ready for a tournament for bass fishing, and we had scouted. We spent all this money scouting, and we went in the back of Mud Creek over here in Gunnersville, and it was full of common carp. All those bass that we had on bed were gone. And I remember thinking, my God, what is going on here? And which today would be great to catch a spawn like that. Well, I used to be angry about that because, you know, we're competitive. I mean, we wanted to win, and we thought we had a great place to fish. And a good friend of mine, Gary Bergman, kept saying, man, come bow fishing with us. I was like, man, I've never shot a bow. Man, I don't know. And I said, okay, let's go. We go out one night, and all he kept talking about was this expensive bow that he owned, right, called an Osprey. And I'll never forget this. So not an Osprey. He kept talking about it. He says, look, I'm going to let you shoot my bow, but don't drop it in the water. And I'm like, I'm half nervous right now because, dang, I don't want to be out $1,000, you know?
Yeah.
And we're in this rinky-dink boat, man. It was, I think it was a bass boat with halogen lights from Home Depot zip-tied to it. And I'm thinking, Lord Jesus, you know, don't let me drown. But I watched
That's a common theme, too.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there watching, and I said, okay, I'm ready, man. And we get up. I'm holding the bow, and I shoot one time in the practice in the water. So, okay, let me try. Guys, I'm not kidding you. The first fish I shot at was a common carp, about an 8-pound common. Shot it right between the eyes and the head. And I tell you what, man, I got that fish in, and I was hooked. I was hooked. I was so hooked that for the next 3 days, I was on bow fishing country. And those of you that know me, I don't sleep at all, man. I mean, I'm an 18-hour day guy. I'm on bow fishing country, going through all the posts, looking to buy a boat. I want to do my own, right?
Yeah,
and, right, of course.
We head to Russellville, Arkansas. And this is the time when I met my friend Joe Greenway and was sending private messages about looking at buying a boat. And he goes, man, there's two boats up here in Russellville, Arkansas you need to come look at. And so Gary Bergman and I make a road trip 3 days later after shooting my first fish. And we get up there to Russellville, Arkansas. And the first boat is a guy that has a F&D. Is that the brand?
F&F.
F&S, yeah. Let me tell you what, this was black. It was in a barn, and there was not a scratch on it. I mean, it was immaculate. It was a fan boat, and I think the guy wanted $25,000 for it. And I remember we took it out, come back. There wasn't a scratch on it. Like, I like to buy stuff and beat it up, right? I'm not going to say, look, dude, I know you want $25,000, but I'm going to hand you $20,000 in cash. We'll just buy it. Let me tell you, that guy would not budge $200.
He was proud of it.
He's sitting with $20,000 in his hands as I'm walking around this boat, and I'm trying to find something wrong. There was nothing wrong with it.
Trying to pick it to pieces. Yeah.
So he goes, look, I'm not coming down. I said, okay, I respect that. So I got one more boat to go look at. We left, and we go to this other boat, which was the fan boat, that Killbilly's boat.
Yep.
And we get it. We get out. And I noticed the guy that took us didn't really understand how to work the boat. And I was just paying attention. He couldn't get the fuel to the fan on. Well, he didn't turn the fuel on, you know. And I'm thinking, don't say anything. Just be quiet. We're out there. The dang thing ain't starting, right? And I think at the time he wanted $12,000 for that boat. We come back, get it on the trailer, and I hand the guy $7,000 cash. And I said, will this buy it? As I begin to walk around the boat. Well, Gary is my gun guy. Like, if you ever seen that movie Red Dawn, he's the gun guy. Like, he's got every gun you can think of. Well, and he's a big guy like me. He's a pretty big guy. So anyway, he's standing with that guy while he's holding the $7,000. And long story short, he goes, this isn't enough. I said, let me tell you what. You got 3 minutes to decide. If not, I'm gone. And I said, I promise you, whenever your divorce is over with, you can buy yourself another boat. And he goes, yeah, you're right. And he goes, okay, I'll do the deal. So
you stuck it to a man getting divorced.
Yeah. That's
how I bought my second car.
Yeah. So we buy the boat. Here's a funny story. I called it the Sanford and Son boat. It was so beat up, right?
Yep.
I remember driving it back. We're going down I-40 coming back to Nashville. And I look at my buddy Gary. I said, Gary, yeah. I said, you know what? I forgot. He goes, what? I said, I don't even own a bow. He goes, what? I don't. I said, call your friends over there at Backwater. I want to order a bow. So I'm probably the only guy to ever buy a bow fishing boat and then a bow second, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's classic.
So you got that boat back and
you know,
what year was that, back, Jeff?
That's 6 years ago.
6 years ago.
That boat's still around, isn't it? And it looks pretty dang good.
Yeah, the joke about that boat is that so when I get the boat back, about 7 years ago now, 6-7 years ago, well, we were already doing wraps for bass boats, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I get the boat, the first thing, you know, in my mind is, hey, dude, we got to put a wrap on this thing, you know, and we put hydro turf and new seats and painted it. It looked brand new. And I'll never forget when I eventually ended up selling that boat, I sold it for $11,500. And in the last 5 years, I think that boat has been bought and sold four or five times. I think the last time was for $16,000 or $17,000.
That's awesome.
That's the one thing I've noticed. Like, you build a boat, and if it's in that $10,000 to $15,000 range, it really doesn't. I mean, if it's got a solid motor, I mean,
it's gonna move. Yeah,
yeah,
it's gonna sell.
It doesn't depreciate. Like, it doesn't fall off.
Well, you know what I've always said, and I get criticized. Like my little friend Bob Esper, he always makes fun of me because I take care of my stuff. And the thing is, this is regardless of what asset that you own, take care of it, wash it, clean it. Because, you know, even when I bought that Air Ranger, that airboat, I mean, put it this way, I basically had that boat for 2 years. What I paid for it is what I ended up basically getting for it, plus another $5,000. So, you know, I put money into that boat, but I took care of it. I fixed it. I cleaned it, you know, and, mm-hmm. and that's just me. But yeah, if you'll see a lot of these boats resold and sold and resold, but yeah, that boat kind of started all the boat wraps and doing the stuff for bow fishing. Definitely.
So do you, this is just kind of jumping subject. Do you think, I mean, I think it does, but do you think wrapping a boat, I mean, not necessarily increases the value. It increases, I mean, it makes it look so much better. I mean, it's a...
Well, here's what it comes down to. Number one, remember, especially a new boat. You get a new boat, you wrap it, there's a day that you're going to sell that boat. You pull that wrap off, that hull, besides the scratches that you dinged into the wrap, it's going to look like a brand new boat.
Right.
The second thing is, and this is what I was having a discussion one day with Brett Dennison. I said, Brett, because he used to joke around me about it. I said, Brett, I don't know about you, but I remember being a kid getting my first Mongoose, and then I got a Super Goose, you know, BMX bicycle.
Yep.
I said, who wanted the stock bicycle? We wanted to go out and buy the anodized handlebars, you know, the anodized, you know, frame, you know. So
it's half the fun.
Yeah. If you're not enjoying, I think half, and be honest with me personally now, I think half of what I enjoy about bow fishing is how to actually make the boat better.
Yeah, definitely.
And what can you do to fix it? I don't care if you're changing out from the LED or from the lights that we used to have at Home Depot, those red lights, halogen lights. Yeah. To our LEDs, 50 watts that we first got from Sea Lot, you know. So I think half of bow fishing for me is being able to increase or do things better and upgrade. And you find that in those mini truck clubs. You find that in other types of clubs where guys are doing stuff together and how to make things better. I mean, and really that's what bow fishing has been. If you look at the evolution the last 6 years, the products that have come out for the Osprey, you know, from Tim's shoot-through rod to Jeff Beal's reel seat, you know, to, you know, G-String's new line puller. I mean, the innovation and the creativity that these guys have, you've got to just sit back and just, you know, smile about it because it's really cool.
Oh, they're definitely smarter than me for sure. I'm just glad that they're out there to make those things that we can use.
I think that's what makes this so much fun too, because we are at the dawn. I mean, like bow fishing obviously has been around for a long time, but it's safe to say that it's exploded in the last, you know, 5-6 years. So we're at the cusp of, you know, in 30 years, they're going to talk about, you know, bow fishing, like we talk about, you know, when Bass Pro started and stuff like that. It's just an interesting time to be in the middle of it. And we get to see all these, major, you know, things come out, whereas in 20-30 years, you know, the shoot through rod will still be around, but, you know, we'll remember when that came out.
Well, let me tell you, share this story with you. I remember the first year we did the U.S. Open, John had 93 days to put that thing on, and, you know, a lot of people don't know that. I mean, it was really crazy. We're at a bar in Nashville, about five of us, and John had it in his mind to do this tournament, and he had 93 days for the first U.S. Open. I mean, that's phenomenal. But I will tell you this, that first U.S. Open, I will never forget everybody that showed up and watching his father walk around so proud of him. And to see this man walking around and, you know, to see Johnny Morris using his phone to take pictures of all the boats. I remember Johnny coming over and go, Jeff, look at this boat, the wrap that you did. And, you know, he's just going through his phone. And the funny story about that first U.S. Open is I remember Johnny Morris walking, and he's about 60 yards away from him. He's about to walk up to Josh Hyatt. if you guys know Josh Hyatt out of Alabama, now he's not into bow fishing as much right now because his daughter's playing softball, but Josh, man, Josh will tell you how it is, right?
Yeah.
And he walks up to Josh, and I'm going, oh my God, Josh, please be good. Please be good. You know, we all have that one friend. And anyway, later on, I said, Josh, I said, you remember that little old man that walked up to you? He goes, oh, yeah, he's asking me some questions about bow fishing. I said, okay. I said, Josh, that's probably the only time you'll have a guy standing next to you worth $4 billion.
Oh, so he had no idea.
No, he had no idea. Talk about humbleness, you know. But to hear JP's father talk about how he started Bass Pro and how that tournament itself reminded him of some of the tournaments he used to bring back to Table Rock back in the day, and how that kind of jump started some of the things that they were doing and in the bass industry. But the products are being innovative, and just the way things have changed in the last 5 years have been instrumental. You know.
Sure. Yeah, and it's. I'll just go. I keep going back to it because it is. I mean, for me myself, if I go out and have a good time and shoot a couple fish, I'm not the guy that, look, you know, let's just fill the barrel every night. That's a great time. Don't get me wrong, but half of the thing is, you know, all winter thinking about what you're gonna do, what, you know, where am I gonna go this, you know, what changes I'm gonna make to the boat. Am I gonna put a kicker on the boat, or I'm gonna do something different, or what kind of lights are we gonna switch to? I mean, that's what makes it. I think that is across the board for everything.
Yeah, how are we going to gain that edge on our on our competition?
Or, you know, just like, what color am I going to dip my Osprey in, you know?
Hey, seriously. I'm just going to tell you this, Jeff. He wants to dip his Oneida gold.
Straight up, like 24 karat.
24 karat gold.
I think it would look a killer.
I'll tell you this, you know, I have my pulse on, like, if you say a team name, I can probably tell you if it's taken or not. Because I deal with so many teams, but I will tell you this: I don't think I've ever seen a 24 karat gold one. Dwayne Skippy may know, you know, and John may know, but you may be the first.
I think I need to do it.
I mean, that puts you in legend status right there.
You know, hey, yeah. My thought is, you know, in college I played a lot of Call of Duty, and the best camouflage you could get at the end of the game was gold.
So it's like, gold.
I just got all the headshots.
Oh, that's awesome.
But, you know, the key to that is, and I'll say this again, is you know, I don't know if you guys have seen that chrome bow that I had done. I thought chrome is cool. And because of the magnesium inside the riser of the Osprey, it wouldn't last, you know. Mm. So whoever's going to do your 24 karat, make sure it lasts, because mine lasted about 30 days before it turned into a tarnished brown camouflage, you can call it.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have to get in some experts.
Mud brown bow right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the innovation. And, you know, I see some of these guys that deck out their Ospreys, and I'm like, dude, that is really, I mean, they and now here's another thing. You got other companies out there that are finally producing parts. This is what I've talked about before, even with JP. I said, look, there is such a huge market for aftermarket part products. And that's what's awesome about bow fishing. You know, look at Joey G-String, the pieces that you can get now, and I'm not talking about being on a waiting list, right? Mm-hmm. You can get pieces right now for your bow. Even the resonator, you know, Nate Griffin has got items that can change your bow. Even Toxic Bow Fishing, Mike with Toxic, man, has got some great grips and added parts. So I think, just back to that BMX bicycle when we were kids, It's really great to see the fact that there's extra parts that you could customize that bow, you know, that's the innovation of our sport.
Definitely, just make it yours. I mean, that's kind of what everybody's mm-hmm. wanting to do.
Yeah, it's
because I don't care who you are, you don't want to be like that other team.
Right.
No. So speaking of teams, you did some shirts for my team. I guess it's been 3 years ago now, and
okay.
Let's kind of go over the process of that. I mean, what, some four guys get together, they want to start a bow fishing team, and they see all these awesome shirts that InDesigns is whipping out. And
yeah,
what do they need to do?
You know, we do a lot of shirts. We've done a lot of designs for the industry. One thing is, I will say this, is that we've, ever since day one, I've always discounted the bow fishing and hunting market. So I told someone the other day, I said, call up with a normal order and see, you're going to find it's a lot cheaper. You know, we personally love to create those designs. One thing I've always said, no matter what I do, I like to leave my fingerprint on an industry, just like fly fishing. I was able to leave my fingerprint on that industry and the way it's perceived today. Just like bow fishing, I think I've left my fingerprint a little bit, just a little bit, on the way the designs are. Remember 5-6 years ago, there were not really cool designs out there. Mm-hmm. And Those T-shirts, you know, what we basically did, it's a $25 deposit. We come up with a cool design, and I bet we probably do 90%, I'm being humble about this, of those bow fishing team shirts. And those T-shirts, they just got to order 24 of them. The average price is about $7, and they get a really cool, not only logo, but a T-shirt. And a lot of those same teams will buy the stickers that we make and also the hats. And then the other teams also, we do the sublimated jerseys. And that's another big thing. If you look this year at the U.S. Open, all those jerseys that TKO, you know, Tommy Woods, and then had on, that won it, those are jerseys that we made. And they're made here.
Those things look awesome. They look awesome. Yeah. Those. You did some for the Fallen Heroes team, right?
Yeah. Candace, they're great people. That's a great program. And I always tell people to always support. That's a good association to work for and do work for. But the Fallen Heroes, that design. So we always try to make it something unique. And I promise you guys, it is tough sometimes. I get people, my friends all the time, say, Jeff, I got a great T-shirt idea. And they'll give me the idea, but the hard part's the artwork, see?
Oh, yeah.
Even like that design we just posted recently, the boat, don't be boat B, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that came from Andy Cardwell. He had a drawing, and the drawing, my gosh, I mean, Andy draws like a second grader, and like most of us do. But the concept was there, and to be able to take that and put it on a T-shirt, sometimes it's not the easiest. It took me about 4 months to finally come up with something, you know. But
if everybody doesn't know what Jeff's talking about, I think it was
that was a classic.
Was it at Worlds 2 years ago?
No, it was the Carp Out last year.
No, it wasn't the Carp Out. It was Worlds.
It was Worlds last year. Yeah,
and yeah, he was having the team meeting, right? And he was drawing on a big board, and basically had a boat coming down the bank, and then he had another boat coming in off the side, and the boat coming in off the side was boat B, and it was basically don't be a butthole and don't be like boat B. You know, if someone's fishing, don't cut them off.
And don't be a boat C that comes on top of everybody. And you know what? We actually, I fished a tournament, and this is what really set it off to get it done. We had it happen to us one night here into the fall, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me, you know, and I had a guy, listen, we're fishing our left-hand side of the river, and we're by ourselves, man, and we're going down a grass line, and we see a boat to our right. And sure enough, that son of a gun came 125 feet in front of me and started fishing in front of me. And my guys were with me. I said, look, God, I said, y'all take a seat. I said, I'm done. I said, I cannot believe these guys just did that. And I came in with my airboat, and they couldn't go anywhere. And they got an education of not being boat C or boat B, you know.
I'm going to bring up the first Carp Out when I witnessed the angry Jeff Kneeball take on a guy trying to get into his cove before time to shoot some fish.
Look, I apologize, but here's the deal. Here's the deal. I don't know, man. I tell you what, you know, I learned a lot shooting with Tommy and Shorty, and those guys are competitors. I mean, big time. And I'm passionate about winning. You know, you got to protect your cove, and it's crazy. We do 4 nights of scouting, and here comes these guys into our place, man. And I'm just like, come on, man.
Oh, those guys were in like a little 16-foot. I don't even know what it was. Jeff was sitting on one side of this bank, and we were sitting on the other. And this boat just come right between us, and I hear that big V8 fire up, and the water started spraying. That's
you know what's interesting about that story is those two guys. By the way, once I confronted them and told them, and then they had like, oh crap, you know. We started talking and laughing and making the best out of it. But you know what? That night of the Carp Out, we had a boat capsize. And those two guys happened to be in that area and actually caught those kids. Let me tell you, by God's grace, we're talking the middle of the Tennessee River. That's probably 800 feet, maybe longer there. It's longer than that. It had to be a mile across. As their duck boat and land on a dang sandbar that if you would have gone 10 feet the other way, you would have been 30 feet down. You would have gone 10 feet, 20 feet the other way, you would have been 40 feet down in that river. And they caught those kids. And I remember coming back out of that Carp Out. And this is a pretty interesting story. Those kids could have drowned. And when I got my boat, they had the kids in one of the paramedics' pickup trucks to dry off. And I tell you what, those kids got a earful for not having their life vest on.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing you're kind of behind and you champion on is the what's the program? You know.
It's Life Vest for Life. And basically, you know, of all times we're having this conversation, yesterday was the 1 year anniversary that we lost Anthony and Joe Greenway. And, you know, it was really crazy. Joe helped me build my current airboat. Great guy, knowledgeable guy. And we had just had a conversation an hour before he took out this little duck boat. And I remember giving him such a hard time going, dude, that's such, I'm like, that's such a small boat. Why are you getting that boat? Get a bigger boat. Well, him and Anthony took this boat out, and what I think is that the rope on the front of the boat got caught in the prop and threw them out, and they drowned. And that happened a year ago, and it, you know, it hit me harder because Joe and I were really good friends, and just like that, he was gone. And you know what? He's been in boats his whole life, and he knew better, just like we all do. And out of that, when bad things happen, find the good. And, you know, we were able to, as a team, raise, we gave each family $5,000 to help bury the two boys. And then we took the rest, I think it was $16,000. And JP, man, stand up, man, was able to get us the life vest at cost. And last year we distributed all those life vests to, you know, different tournaments, and the main thing is to tell the story, and I hope one day one of those life vests, if it helps save one life, it's worth it. But yeah, everybody needs to wear a life vest, you know, and you know, at least have that on if you ever have an accident.
Oh, it's, you know, you always think, and I was the worst about it, and I didn't know those two men, but from all the outpouring everybody had on, you know, about them and the stories that were told, that, I mean, they seem like great guys, but I was bad about, I'd jump a cove. Well, I'm just going to cross, right? I'm just crossing the cove. I'm just going to hop up on plane. And you wouldn't throw your life vest on. And I wear it religiously now.
Yeah. You know what I tell people? If you come to Guntersville, please wear your life vest, because let me tell you what, if you drown, what's going to get you are the turtles.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad.
Hey, it's true, and I'm telling you, if you don't believe me, we'll take you to the turtle farmer over here that we dump fish off. And I'm telling you, who was with us that night? But anyway, we took one of the big 50-pound buffs, and we threw it into the one of the ponds that he's got there with all the turtles. That turtle that buffalo was gone in about 15 minutes.
Wow.
Gone. I mean, those turtles, now again, there's a bunch of them in one spot, but listen, you know, at least let your family, loved ones find your body, because I want to tell you, you know, the thing with Facebook, when it brings back those old memories from last year, and I'm looking at that this morning, I saw when I made the announcement, you know, at 5 a.m. that they did find, you know, it's tough when they finally find your buddies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, everybody needs to, I don't care how brave you are, but, you know, for a $75 investment, go do it. If you're gonna buy a $300 bow or $800 Osprey, you can spend $75 on a good life vest.
Oh, for sure. I mean, those blow up vests are so comfortable. I mean, you don't even truthfully have to take them off when you're shooting.
There's a lot of especially in the winter. I put it on. I always forget I have it. You know, it's just there.
And, it's just getting in the habit, you know, you just got to make a habit of it.
You're not doing it for yourself. You're obviously doing it for your family and everybody in your community, because, you know, a lot of people care about you. So it's super important.
Yeah. But that's one of the good things that came from the BAA last year, is the being able to buy those life vests and give them out to the different tournaments. And heck, there's a few that I kept to give out to people. I'd meet them at different places. You could tell they didn't have a pot to piss in. I made sure they had a life vest.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, well, I saw a guy yesterday rolling out to the lake and didn't have a life vest one in his boat. We were going out bow fishing last night, and I pulled up to get gas, and there was a guy that just bought a brand, not a brand new boat, but he'd bought a boat new to himself, and just not a life vest in it. And I didn't even think, you know, I've got an extra one in the boat. I could have just thrown it over there, said, here, you know, yeah, throw this thing on.
I'm hoping this year, you know, a lot of the events, the directors that are putting on these events will enforce that rule more. You know what? I couldn't imagine putting on an event, you know. I think it happened with Joe Nichols. I mean, he had an event 2 years ago, I think, maybe three, and I can be corrected on this, but they had an event and two boys that drowned. And I remember when Joe and Anthony passed away, we started raising money. One of the parents reached out to me how thankful they were that we were doing something like this to help others, and that, you know, but yeah, you know, accidents are going to happen. We just got to do what we can to prepare and prevent and be smart, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we're on the water at night, you know, not necessarily always obeying the speed limit laws, and
yeah. I mean, hey guys, we're boat fishermen. I mean, yes. You know, you got to remember this, and I try to tell people this. Boat fishing guys and girls are a different breed, right? They have, hate to say this for your radio, but they got balls, man. I mean, a lot of these guys are, you know, and that's probably why we like each other. That's probably also why sometimes we want to tear each other's heads off. But you know what? They have a different mentality. I mean, to be able to stay up 12 hours and go to work the next day, or let's say you do one of the nights where you get on the fish, you don't leave till 3 a.m, but you got to be at work at 7:30. I mean, it takes a certain type of craziness, but at the same time, we got to be smart.
No, for sure. And so why don't you tell us, what's just your favorite bow fishing story? Something that
we're gonna start a trend here.
Yeah, we're gonna have, you
anytime
know,
we have a guest, we ask him a couple specific questions. So you know,
I tell you what, it's probably going down with Tommy and Shorty and meeting Alan Yater for the first time, who is a legend in bow fishing. I mean, if you guys ever get to go down to Southern style bow fishing in Louisiana, I mean, that's the mecca. That's like if you put Gunnersville. I mean, Venice and all that area is a mecca of bow fishing. And if you ever get to meet Alan Yater, I'm telling you what, he is a character. And I love him to death, man. But you know why I care? He speaks his mind. He'll tell you exactly how it is. But he is a legend when it comes in. When I got to meet Alan and go out and shoot fish, and I shot my first gator gar with him, I mean, it's just those kind of memories you just can't erase. And to be with legends like that, and to learn and to listen. But we were out there, and, you know, if you go to, have you guys been to Venice yet?
We have not.
Nope.
You've got to go, because listen, it's so much water, and in 5 minutes, you are lost. You are in Mars. You're on another planet. You have no idea where you are. You definitely, if you're going to go down there and shoot fish by yourself, take two different GPSs, take a backup of everything and lots of bug spray. But we're out there shooting the marsh, and I'm just like a new cow in a cell barn. My eyes are wide open, just learning and listening. And, you know, I got three legends on the boat. And I've always said this, if you want to learn to be successful, mimic the successful people. Try to learn from them. And to hear their stories and to hear just them talking and understanding how to drive, where they're going, what they're looking for. Because I'm going to ask questions all the time. But Alan, let me tell you what, when I shot my first gator gar, it's about a 6.5-foot gator gar. You know, he put me on it, and man, it was just, those are the kind of memories that you'll never forget when you see a 6-foot fish in the water. And first of all, not only that, having your friends do backup shots and getting that sucker in the water, and those are the experiences that's probably one of my favorite stories right there. Just being with the legends of bow fishing and listening to them.
To kind of, I guess, pimp out Southern style, in Louisiana you can shoot gator gar, catfish, redfish,
mullet,
sheephead.
Guys, let me tell you, one of the best fish, I'll tell you this, is before we used to use sheephead, and I was like, they're hard to fillet. But we found a guy down in Venice at the marina, they charge 25 cents a pound. And I got to tell you, my personal opinion, I think a sheephead tastes better than a redfish. And I just had a redfish on a fillet, a half of a fillet, at a restaurant down in Atlanta. It was $37, right? So you can imagine me eating that $37 half fillet going, really, $37? When I can shoot five of these down in Louisiana a day, you know?
Yeah.
But you can shoot sheephead down there, you know, and those are fun. You know, when we go down there personally, like, you know, the last trip we were on, we took a doctor, and this guy hadn't shot a fish. He'd never shot a fish ever, and he met us down there from Dallas, and I think the first fish he shot was a sheephead, then a redfish, and then his third fish was a 5-foot gator gar.
That's a introduction to the sport for you right there.
Yeah, I mean, I told him, I said, yeah, I said, there's guys been doing this 15, 20 years, never shot a gator gar. And, but once you, once you go down there, it's amazing, the water and the fish. I mean, there's stingray you can run into. Now, the stingray are not as big as the ones we shoot down in Panama City, but, they're available. The mullet, for my guys that love numbers, man, the needlefish are fun to shoot. If you can shoot a needlefish, man, you get a prize on my boat, man. They're not the easiest fish to shoot. The mullet, same thing. Great to shoot those mullets.
Oh, yeah. We, I don't know if we did. We were with Jeff White last summer.
And yeah.
That was Panama City, and there was some needlefish out there, and I don't.
You got one. If I recall, I thought you did.
I didn't want to brag, but
yeah, you got one.
I think I did shoot one.
We did.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, we both whiffed off of probably like a 50-pound.
Yeah, ray. We both missed a 50-pound stinger right off the front of the boat.
Oh no!
We were running around basically looking for rays, and I shot a needlefish as we were basically on plane running around.
Yeah,
but
I tell you, Jeff White, if you listen. Just like Venice shooting with Southern style with Alan Yater, that's definitely a bucket list. If you can ever get down and go with Jeff White down there in Panama City with Fish Hunter Enterprises, it is a bucket list. It's a blast. I tell you a cool story. Last year, I took David and Denisha. They've got a TV show that they've got out, and we took them down there. And I'll tell you, dude, it had been storming. The water conditions were bad. And I actually went to the back of the boat. Didn't even have my bow in my hand, which is it's a cardinal rule. I couldn't believe I broke. But I'm sitting there in the back of the boat with Jeff going, oh, it's going to be a rough night, man. He's, yeah, we'll just have fun, make the best of it. And I'm not kidding you guys. I look up 30 seconds later ahead of the boat, and I go, oh, my gosh, look up there, Jeff. Put the boat in neutral. Well, we had four girls in the front of the boat, including David was filming, and I could not believe the big stingray. And all four of those girls, we said, get ready. They all shot, and guess what? They all connected, and it weighed 98 pounds.
Oh,
that's a stud.
So close.
Yeah, here I am in the back without my bow, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So we get it in the boat, and I'm excited because I'm like, my gosh, just when you think the worst conditions could be the best time, right?
Yep.
Guys, the very next stingray was 94 pounds.
Wow.
And it was hoss. I mean, you don't ever have back-to-back stingrays like that. Let me tell you, that was one of those epic nights where normally you get off the water by 12, 1 o'clock. I think it was 3:30 in the morning. And I bet the average size stingray was 60 pounds or 75 pounds.
That's awesome.
We got to go back.
Yeah, I've been twice with Jeff, and similar to Louisiana, like you said, with Yater and being on there with Tommy and Shorty is,
yeah,
just talking to Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's traveled to Missouri up where we're from to shoot the Open, and he's at the Carp Out, and he's at all the big tournaments. And just picking his brain was probably one of the coolest things I've done in a long time.
Yeah, he's got the knowledge. I mean, that's what I love about it. He has so much knowledge, and he's willing to, if you listen and pay attention, and his wife, Cookie, is great. You know, we did a trip, the last trip I did with him in the fall, I got, they have a deckhand, I call him Merle Haggard, because he looks just like Merle Haggard.
He does. And I remember him.
He don't say a word, right?
No.
Merle loves me, dude. Well, Merle was sick. He couldn't make it. And I said, Jeff, do you mind if I can, you know, gaff all the stingrays? He goes, so I got the lesson, right? I said, look, I've never let anybody do this. Just be careful, blah, 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 right? Well, I want to tell you what. I had the most fun grabbing those rays in, cutting off their tails, you know. And, I mean, it was nasty and bloody, but it was a blast. And And but yeah, Jeff's a great guy. The knowledge, and then, hey, also down there is all the species of fish that you can shoot. You know, this year I shot, or last year I shot three records down there. I forgot which ones they are right now, but I mean, it was just amazing the fish that you can shoot to add to the bucket list that you're not aware of. So,
oh yeah, there's you can shoot flounder, stingrays, mullet.
Spanish mackerel. Yeah, we got Spanish mackerel.
Needlefish. Barracuda. Yeah.
And don't shoot sharks, guys. Let's make that announcement. Don't be like me and get in trouble and shoot a shark when you're not supposed to.
Boy, I wanted to. We had one.
Yeah, don't shoot that 7-foot hammerhead. That's a no-no. but now listen, Louisiana, you can shoot sharks though.
Did not know that.
That's awesome. Yep, you can.
So Louisiana, I think it's Louisiana and California. Is that right?
Louisiana, California. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about Alabama, though.
Gotcha. Mm. Cool.
All right, Jeff. Another question we got: if you were to pick three songs, so I mean, we all listen to music, right? While we are bow fishing, a lot of times. So, top three tracks for bow fishing. What do you got?
Top three tracks. You know, you're definitely going to have to add our boy Eazy-E in there.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Take it way back.
I mean, that's the music that I grew up on, you know.
Mongoose is an Eazy-E. I like it.
Yeah, you got to have Eazy-E in there. You know, we like, gosh, man, you caught me off guard here. Colt Ford has a good song or two. We definitely like Colt Ford, and I'm also a Corey Smith fan. So
I like Corey Smith.
Yeah, and we've met Corey. Corey's a great dude. I've said to him before, you need to get out in the water and shoot fish with us, you know. But definitely, probably my Eazy-E is my go-to guy to start it off with, you know.
Just put it on the Eazy-E station on Pandora and just roll.
Yeah, I mean, Eazy does it. You can't forget that song. And you know, the funny story is, you're gonna laugh at me, is my buddies will always laugh at this. I was so cheap on buying a sound system. I would just bring that little small circle speaker. Yeah. I was zip tying the stick, and you know, they're like, really, you got this big airboat, and you got so all my new airboat I built, it was really great. Wet Sound stepped up and gave me, or I got a really cool deal on the Wet Sound's 6-foot bar.
Dude, those things are ridiculous, aren't they? I got one on my boat.
Yeah, so now we have music, you know, and Marty or Mia with Munster Boats got me the hookup on that deal. So now I have music, but yeah, definitely. So what are your top three, guys?
Oh, gosh. I go all over the place.
Okay, so I got a story. So the very first night I go out with Chase and Chad, and so he puts on some Pandora playlist, and I kid you not, it had, because I took a mental note, Britney Spears came on for one song.
Yeah.
Sum 41.
Oh, that, yeah.
Ludacris. And then, just kind of, I enjoy country music, but not like today's country music, but it was kind of, I can't remember what song. So, I mean, it was like, so Sum 41, Britney Spears, Ludacris.
I think there was some modern country.
And Jason Aldean.
Yeah, there was some modern country, but then I also threw in some Hayes Carl, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh,
yeah. So definitely I had Hayes Carl. the full grommet of everything.
Yeah. No, it was good.
Well, you know, I think music, I hate to say this, but it's so important to our bow fishing. I mean, it's I have to have music. I have to have something playing. And you know what's funny is we actually have, that's how we got some of our shirt guys designed. You know, like, I like big butts, and I cannot lie, you know?
Yeah, right, sure.
And that got changed to I like big buffs, and I cannot lie, you know?
Yeah, I've got that. I bought that shirt.
Yep, supporting that's right. That's InDesigns. Right. Yeah,
but that's how we got a lot of those designs we do for shirt guys. It's based off songs or, you know, last year we came out with one, you know, based off the character from Hangover, the Chinese dude, you know, but did you die? Mm-hmm. So, and I think we have it on an airboat, or on the light rail with the guy hanging off barely, you know, so,
it's fun. You guys definitely have some good one-liners on the shirts for sure. That's,
yeah. And like I said, we sell a lot of those shirts and, you know, it's funny the way that all got started. I was with Tommy and Shorty. We were driving down on another trip to Louisiana, and I sit there and thought, guys, I need to figure out how I'm going to pay for this, right? You know, when people always ask me, who do you pro staff for? I don't pro staff for anybody. I pro staff for myself, right?
Yeah.
I've got to sell shirts to pay for my gas bill, you know, or my hotel bill, or my hair gel, or my fresh toilet paper, you know.
And Lord knows you need a lot of hair gel.
I should come out with my own line of it, but yeah. So that's how the first shirt got done. And let me tell you what, I give credit to Shorty Baxter. You know, we started going off some ideas. Well, you know, I'm going to try that first design. And then one thing that led to another and another and another and another. And obviously, since we make a few t-shirts, so obviously we don't need to charge $25 a t-shirt, you know,
mm-hmm.
I always laugh about some of the musicians that we do for Nashville, and I go to the concert, like Chris Stapleton, and I see that $25 t-shirt that we sold to them for a really cheap amount. And, you know, we don't need to knock off heads and bowfish. I think $10 is a fair price, and, you know, and I promise you guys, it makes me feel good when I see people wearing our product out there. And, you know, at the U.S. Open this year, for example, I mean, I sat back and just almost just – I had such a great feeling just looking at everybody. And I would say at least 60% of the people had something that my company, my employees made that they're wearing. So that was kind of cool.
You know, you guys are, and I hate to just say this, but you guys are awesome to deal with. I mean, we've had you do shirts for our farm and our bow fishing team, and then even just random designs for stuff that we didn't even print towards the end, you know? And it's just always, it's always good to deal with, you know, you and the girls that you have working in your office. I mean, your design girls, and it's just
turnaround's really fast. We've done, and it's not just shirts and hats. I mean, you guys have made pop-up tents for Battery Outfitters, and like table, like if you have like a booth at a show, big tablecloth, big, you know. I was asking Daniel, I said, hey, what else can I get for this? And he was just like, oh, let me tell you. By the end of the day, it was like, don't send me a bill. Can I have installments? It was bad.
You know, it's funny. When I started that company 16 years ago, I just did really well from the dot-com industry, but the dot-com industry was dying. And a friend of mine up in Nashville, Mike Kerb with Kerb Records, I was in a meeting, and I'm like, man, the internet is dying right now. And, you know, at the time, you know, kids were stealing music off MP3. You know, MP3 is off Napster, and the whole music industry was dying. And for some reason, I got out of the dot-com industry but took the experience and started screen printing. I ended up having a big job I did for a musician back then and also for another corporate client. And one thing led to another. I think God gave me a gift to see the opportunity in life and also not be fearful to take that next risk and step out. You know, but at the same time, I remember that first 3 years, we worked 7 days a week, and the first 6 months all by myself, I didn't have anybody. And hiring that first employee and the second employee, and now we're all 15, 16 years later, we've got 35 great employees, and the girls up front are awesome, you know.
So who is the guy you're always giving a hard time in the back with the dreads?
Well, you know, he's got a great story. He's not connected to social media, but I have a friend of mine that, and let me tell you, I love the underdog. You'll never meet a guy that I love the underdog. I want to see people that come from nothing like myself. You know, I'm a high school dropout, but my mother got sick. At 16, we lost everything. We lost our house, and, you know, I could work and make more money than I could being in school to help out. So I've always loved the underdog. Well, Cheese is his name, and Cheese has a great story. He got caught up selling drugs at age 17 and went to prison for 12 years. And Doug Korn, one of the head pro guys here in Tennessee, is a good friend of mine. I've always said, Doug, if you find good employees, if you got somebody that's a diamond in the rough, let me know. And it's funny, over the last 12 years, he sent me 7 diamond in the roughs, and I have 6 that still work for me.
That's awesome.
And Cheese is one that he just got out of prison, you know, and had no job skills. But the funny story is with Cheese is I remember talking to him, and believe it or not, when he was in prison, he was friends with the Aryan Nation, the Hispanics, the M13s. I mean, he tells me all this stuff. They would invite him to what they call their picnics. I mean, he was such a lovable guy that he didn't belong to the Crips or the Bloods or that. He was himself, but he's been with me, I think, 6 or 7 years now, and he's got such a lovable personality. And here's another thing. He loves my business like it's his own, and I'm a little different than most companies. I want to make sure my employees are taken care of and they're happy, and at the same time, they know what to expect. They know what level of service we want. They want, you know, there's a lot of pressure there, but they perform, and, you know, he's been with me a long time. But if you watch any of our YouTube videos, he's such a happy guy, and I think that's what you need working for you at your company, and they need to have fun, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I think you were chasing around with some sort of bug or something, and he like to got down, you know.
Well, remember, I took those guys out bow fishing because they hit it a goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were all, hey, take us bow fishing. I'm like, look, you got to do this or do this. I want them to, I don't want it to be just given to them. Well, they hit the goal, so I took him and another guy out on Gunnersville. Let me tell you what, I had to pull the O about an hour into the trip after it's dark. We're going, we're shooting fish. Uh-oh, the lights just turned off, right? The motor stopped. Uh-oh, we got problems, you know? It is black dark in the middle of Gunnersville Lake. I'm going to tell you what, those two black dudes got so scared. Let me tell you, they got down in the fish bucket. They found the lowest.
Oh, my gosh.
They found the lowest spot in the boat, right? And, by the way, when they first got on the boat, they had two life vests on. They had the one around the belt and the one over the shoulders, man. And but back again, yeah, it's good to have great employees like that. I like to show that, you know, story, that side of it sometimes.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, we're pushing on an hour and 15 minutes, so we're going to go ahead and shut this deal down. And
well, good.
I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, Jeff, really appreciate it.
You know, again, great Jeff Niebuhl with InDesigns, T-shirts, boat wraps, basically anything you need screen printed. I mean, probably get you some underwear if you want. So,
hey, we can. But, hey, guys, I appreciate you guys doing this. Like I said, when you sent me that first episode, you know, I listened to it all the way through, and I enjoyed hearing the stories, and I can't wait to hear future people that you get on their boat to hear their stories also.
Oh, we're excited too. We think it's definitely got some traction, and we think that bow fishing's growing and people are just craving info, like you said. And I think this is a way we're going to be able to get it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, be able to apply it and year round information. That's kind of what we're going for. We want to anyway. So I want to thank Jeff for the logo, helping us out, get that put together. Looks awesome.
You're welcome. Well, y'all have a good one. I appreciate it, okay, guys?
All right.
Yep. Thank you, sir. Catch you later.
All right.
All right. We'll see you guys.
See
you.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was a pretty fun conversation with Jeff.
Oh, loads of information for sure. You know, that guy, I'd never met Jeff, and he hooked me up with a deer lease in Kansas, and I've kind of got to know him through that, and you know, just a humble guy and someone that loves bow fishing and is supporting it through working with the BAA and just, you know, he sees where it can go.
Yeah, definitely. Just a wealth of information too. And just, yeah. And if you don't have him on Facebook, he's probably got plenty of friends, but it's pretty comical most days to.
Yeah. I would definitely give him a follow on Facebook and Instagram, because you're always going to see, some sort of dead animal or some sort of shenanigans in his office.
Yeah, and he runs InDesigns and The Shirt Guy. So all these T-shirts we're talking about, I'll post a link on the blog so that everybody can check it out. And they got shirts and hats and decals and the whole nine yards. So that was, you know, be good.
Yeah, be sure to check us out. We're on iTunes now. We're pretty pumped about that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And if you do listen on iTunes, be sure to subscribe, and if you do like the episode, leave a review. That helps us index better with iTunes, so that if somebody does look for a bow fishing podcast or just browsing around for anything, we'll pop up. And share it on social media, Facebook, Instagram, whatever y'all want, because the more traction we get, the more cool guests we can have on, and it'll just be better and better.
Just the tip of the iceberg right here.
That's right. We're having fun, though. And I think we decided, like, before the very first episode that we recorded, we were like, well, we're going to do this whether whether it's good or not, and we're just going to keep doing it. So,
you know, it's fun. I'm sitting here in my office at a truck stop. I got my boots off and sitting in a chair that my grandpa set in 20 years ago. And
I'll post a picture. It's some kind of site.
I'm feeling pretty sexy. I guess this episode will be out on Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, Monday or Tuesday.
We're going to try to knock one out about every week if we can. Mm-hmm. When tournament season gets closer, we may have to go back to every 2 weeks because things get a little busy with kids and family and work and scouting and.
Oh yeah,
the whole U.S. yards. Open.
That's right. So. Well, I don't got anything else. Be sure to like us on Facebook, social media, and
yeah,
share and subscribe.
Rough Fish Registry.
All right, guys. Talk to you later. See Thanks. Ya.